Gusts of greasy black smoke rose up to the starry sky, devouring the falling snow. At the center of the brew was a truck, a semi, its iron body burning. The chassis was twisted, the cab crushed under heaps of dirt and rock, as red and gold flames licked upward. A sea of burning oil and diesel fuel spread to scorch everything it touched. He stared, stunned. There, under the debris, were dozens upon dozens of bodies. His herald, Thistledown. Whittersnap, who had once whistled through a blade of grass to make a serving girl dance. Snaggle, who'd carefully limned the ceiling of the feasting room in silver. The Hob, who'd woven the mouse-tail rug, screamed, rolling around in fire. Elibert pushed Reuben to the side just as a granite tombstone fell from above, cracking on the floor of the hall. "You must leave, my lord!" he shouted. "Where is Ruddles?" Reuben demanded. "Dulcamara! They don't matter!" Elibert's grip on Reuben tightened. "You are our king!" Through the smoke, figures appeared, chopping at the fallen and the injured. "Get the Fae and the whole ways to safety!" Reuben wrenched his arm free. "Take them to the Kinnelin ruins!" Elibert hesitated. Two bolts flew through the rancid smoke to embed themselves in what remained of the earthen wall. Thin shafts of glass that Seely knights used for arrows, so fine that you could barely feel them as they pierced your heart. "As you said, I am your king. Do it now!" Reuben pushed his way through the choking broom, leaving Elibert behind. The same fawn who had brought Reuben the hooves of his fellows was trying to dig another fairy out from beneath a mound of earth, and nearby lay Cyrillin, who loved tears so much that he saved them in tiny vials that cluttered up his room. His aqua skin was smeared with dusty blood and silver burrs that had been shot from bright court slings. As Reuben watched, the fawn gasped, his body arched, and he fell. Reuben drew his curved sword. All his life he had been in service to battle, but he had never seen the like of what was happening all around him. The bright court had never fought so inelegantly. He dodged just before the tines of a golden trident caught him in the chest. The Seely knight swung again, her teeth bared. He slammed his sword into her thigh and she faltered. Grabbing her trident at the base, he sliced her throat, quick and clean. Blood sprayed his face as she fell to her knees, reaching for her own neck in surprise. He didn't know her. Two humans rushed at him from either side. One held up a gun, but he cut off the hand that held it before the mortal had a hope of firing. He stabbed the other through the chest. A human boy, perhaps 20, with a Brookdale College t-shirt and rumpled hair, slumped over Reuben's hooked sword. For a moment, the boy reminded him of Kay. Kay. Dead. There was a shout and Reuben turned to see a shower of silver pine cones burst just short of where he stood. Through the smoke he saw Ruddles, taking a bite out of the side of a Seely Fae's face, Dulcamara dispatching two others with knives. One of Reuben's pages, Clotbur, slammed a burning harp into another fairy. Here, in his once majestic hill, human corpses still held their iron weapons and stiffening hands as they slumped beside more than a dozen unmoving unseely troops in shining armor. The fire lit the bodies, one by one.
"Quickly!"
Dulcamara said. Choking black smoke was everywhere. Somewhere in the distance, Reuben could hear sirens wailing. Above them, the mortals came to pour water on the burning hill. Clotbur coughed, slowing, and Reuben lifted him up, settling the boy against his shoulder.
"How did she do this?"
asked Dulcamara, her fingers clenched white-knuckled around the hilt of her blade. Reuben shook his head. There were protocols to fairy battles. He could not imagine Solarial putting decorum aside, especially when every advantage was hers. But, too, who of her people would know what she had done this day? Only those few she had sent to command the mortals. Most were dead. One cannot dishonor oneself before the dead. It occurred to him then that he'd misunderstood Dulcamara's question. She didn't want to know how Solarial could be so hideously inventive. She was puzzling out how it had been accomplished.
Mortals, Reuben said. And now that he considered it, he had to admit a grudging awe for so radical and terrible a stratagem. Salarial's folk are charming humans instead of leading them off roofs. She's making troops of them. Now we are more than overmatched. We are lost.
The weight of the soot-smeared fairy in his arms made him think of all of the folk of the Night Court. All those he had sworn to be sovereign over. All those lives he'd been willing to accept in trade for Salarial's death. And he wondered in that moment what he might have accomplished if he'd done more than just endure. Whom he might have saved. As though catching his thoughts, Ruddles turned toward him with a frown.
What now, my king?
Reuben found himself wanting to win the unwinnable war. He had known only two rulers, both great and neither good. He did not know how to be any kind of king, nor how to win, other than to be even more ruthless than they. Kay pushed Corny ahead of her, through the crowd near the door of the club, out past the ID check woman who still looked giddy with enchantment. He held his hands above his head as in surrender, and when people came close, he flinched. They walked like that for several blocks, past people in their heavy coats shuffling through the slush. Kay watched the heels of a woman's ostrich leather boots stab through an icy mound of snow. The woman stumbled. Corny turned toward her, dropping his hands so that they now hung in front of him. He looked like a zombie lurching toward its next victim.
"I know where,"
Kay said, taking deep breaths of the acrid iron air. She crossed several blocks, Corny behind her. The streets were a maze of names and bodegas, similar enough for her to get easily turned around. She found her way back to Café des Artistes, though, and from there to the fetish shop. Corny looked at her in confusion.
"Gloves,"
she told him firmly as she steered him inside. The scent of burning patchouli thickened the air in the irascible peacock. Leather corsets and thongs hung from the walls, their metal buckles and zippers gleaming. Behind the desk, a bored-looking older man read the paper, not even glancing up at them. In the back of the store, Kay could see the restraints, floggers, and whips. The hollow eyes of masks watched her as she threaded her way toward a pair of elbow-length rubber gloves. She grabbed them, paid the board clerk with 5 glamoured leaves, and bit off the plastic tag with her teeth. Corny stood next to a marble table, fingers pressed to a stack of flyers advertising a fetish ball. The paper yellowed in widening circles, aging beneath his hands, withering. A slow smile curved on his mouth, as though watching it gave him pleasure.
"Stop that,"
Kay said, holding out the gloves. Corny started, looking at her as though he didn't know her. Even as he slid on the gloves, he did so numbly, and then stared at his rubber-encased arms in puzzlement. Walking out, the shine of a pair of chromed handcuffs lined in mink caught Kay's eye, and she picked them up, running her thumb over the soft pelt. Years of shoplifting instincts made her slip them into her pocket before she hit the door.
"I can't believe you jumped some guy in a bathroom," Kay said as soon as they'd crossed the street.
"What?" Corny glowered.
"I can't believe you just stole a pair of fuzzy handcuffs, klepto. Anyway, he wasn't some guy. He was from the Seelie Court. He was one of them."
"One of them? A fairy? Like I'm one of them?"
"He was there to get you. He said he was supposed to bring you to Salarial,"
Corny yelled at her, and the name seemed to carry through the cold night air.
"And for that, you almost kill him?"
Kay's voice rose, sounding shrill even to her own ears.
"I hate to break this to you," Corny said nastily, "but Salarial hates you. You're the one who screwed up her plan to take over the Unseelie Court. Plus, you've been screwing her ex-boyfriend. Will you stop with the, right, I know, impossible quest? Look, I'm sure I could list more things about you she hates, but I think you get my point. Whatever she wants, we want the opposite."
"I don't care about her or her messengers," Kay shouted. "I care about you, and you're acting crazy."
Corny shrugged and turned away from her, looking through the window of a shop as if he were seeing some other place in the racks of clothing. Then he smiled at himself in the glass.
Whatever, Kay. I'm right about him. They love to hurt people. People like Janet.
Kay shuddered, guilt over Janet's death too fresh for his words not to feel like an accusation.
I know. Corny interrupted her. Anyway, I got cursed, so I guess I got what I deserved, right?
The universe is in balance. I got what I was asking for.
That's not what I meant, Kay said. I don't even know what I mean. I'm just freaked out. Everything's coming apart.
You're freaking out? Everything I touch rots. How am I going to eat food? How am I going to jerk off?
Kay laughed despite herself. Not to mention I am going to have to dress up in down-market fetish wear forever. Corny held up a gloved hand.
Good thing that turns you on, Kay said.
A slow smile spread over his mouth. Okay, it was dumb, what I did. At least I should have found out what Solario wanted.
Kay shook her head. It doesn't matter. Let's go back to Brooklyn and figure out what to do about your hands.
Corny pointed to a payphone hanging outside of a bar.
You want me to call your mom's cell? I could tell her we got kicked out of the club for being underage. I can lie like crazy.
Kay shook her head. After you beat up someone in the bathroom, I think she knows what we got kicked out for.
He was hitting on me, Corny said primly. I had to protect my virtue.
Kay let herself and Corny into her mother's apartment with a spare key and threw herself down on the bed. Corny flopped down beside her with a groan. Looking up at the popcorn of the ceiling, she studied the grooves and fissures, letting her mind drift from Corny's curse and the explanation she didn't have for running out on her mother's show. She thought of Reuben instead, standing in front of the entire assemblage of the Unseelie Court, and of the way they'd bowed their heads. But that made her think of all the children they'd snatched from cradles and strollers and swing sets to replace with changelings, or worse. She imagined Reuben's slender fingers circling, flailing, rosy limbs. Looking across the bed, she saw Corny's fingers instead, each one encased in rubber.
We're going to fix things, Kay said.
How are we going to do that exactly? Corny asked.
Not that I'm doubting you, mind.
Maybe I could take the curse off of you. I have magic, right?
He sat up.
You think you can?
I don't know. Let me get rid of my glamour so I can use whatever I've got.
She concentrated, imagining her disguise tearing like cobwebs. Her senses flooded. She could smell the crusts of burnt food in the burners of the stove, the exhaust from cars, the mold inside the walls, and even the filthy snow they'd tracked across the floor. And she felt the iron, heavier than ever, eating away at the edges of her power as clearly as she felt the brush of wings across her shoulders.
Okay, she said, rolling toward him. Take off a glove.
He removed one and held out the hand to her. She tried to imagine her magic as she'd been told to, like a ball of energy prickling between her palms. She concentrated on expanding it, despite the iron-soaked air. When it settled over Corny's hands, her skin stung like she clutched nettles. She could change the shape of his fingers, but she couldn't touch the curse.
I don't know what I'm doing, she said finally, helplessly, letting her concentration lapse and the energy dissipate.
Just the attempt had exhausted her.
That's okay. I heard about a guy who breaks spells, a human.
Really? How do you hear about him? Kay fumbled with her pocket. Corny turned his face away from her, toward the window.
I forget.
Remember the paper that girl gave me? The fixer? There's a place to start. Fixing sounds like what we're looking for.
You think you have to beep him like a drug dealer?
Corny yawned and put the glove back on.
Your mom is going to totally make us sleep on the floor, isn't she?
Kay turned to him, pressing her face against his shoulder. His shirt smelled like bug spray, and she wondered what the fairy who'd cursed him had wanted. She wondered about the other Kay, still trapped in the Seelie Court.
Do you think I should tell her?
She mumbled into the t-shirt.
Tell her what? That we want the bed?
That I'm a changeling. That she has a daughter who got stolen.
Why would you want to do that?
He lifted his arm and Kay ducked under it, pillowing her head on his chest.
Because none of this is real. I don't belong here.
Where else would you belong? Corny asked.
Kay shrugged. I don't know. I'm neither fish nor fowl. What's left?
Good red herring, I think, he said. It's a fish.
At least I'm good and red.
A key rattled in the door. Kay jumped up and Corny grabbed her arm.
Okay, tell her.
She shook her head hurriedly. The door opened and Ellen walked into the room, her shoulders dusted with new-fallen snow. Kay reached for the shreds of her glamour to make herself human-seeming, but it came to her uneasily. The magic and the iron had eaten up more of her energy than she'd supposed.
It's not working, Kay whispered. I can't change back.
Corny snorted.
I guess you'll have to tell her now.
I heard you guys got into some trouble, eh? Ellen laughed as she dumped her guitar case on top of the paper-covered kitchen table. She tugged off her coat and dropped it on the floor. Kay turned her back to her mother, hiding her face beneath her hair. She wasn't sure how much her glamour hid, but at least she could no longer feel her wings.
He was hitting on me, Corny said.
Ellen raised her eyebrows.
You should learn to take a compliment better.
Things got out of hand, Kay said. The guy was a jerk.
Walking over to the bed, Ellen sat down and started tugging off her boots.
I guess I should be glad you two vigilantes weren't hurt.
What happened to you, Kay? You look like you got a jar of green dye dropped on you. And why are you hiding your face?
Kay sucked in her breath so hard that she felt dizzy, her stomach twisted.
You know, Corny said, I think I'm going to walk down to the corner store. I feel a sudden need for cheese curls. Want anything?
Some kind of diet drink, Ellen said.
Grab some money out of my coat pocket.
Kay,
he called.
She shook her head.
Okay, I'll be right back, Corny said.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw him give her a look as he unlatched the door.
I have something to tell you, Kay said without turning.
She could hear her mother banging in the cabinets.
There's something I want to tell you, too. I know I promised we'd stay in Jersey, but I just couldn't. My mother, she just gets to me. You know that. It hurt me when you stayed behind.
Kay started, but Ellen cut her off.
No, she said. I'm glad. I guess I always figured that so long as you were happy, then I was an okay mother, no matter how strange our lives got. But you weren't happy, were you? So, okay, Jersey didn't work out. But things will be different in New York. This place is mine, not some boyfriend's. And I'm bartending, not just doing gigs. I'm turning things around. I want another chance.
Mom,
Kay half turned.
I think you should hear what I have to say before you go on.
About tonight?
Ellen asked.
I knew there was more to the story. You two would never attack some guy because he...
Kay cut her off.
About a long time ago.
Ellen took out a cigarette from a pack on the table. She lit it off of the stove. Turning, she squinted, like she'd just noticed Kay's skin.
Well, shoot.
Kay took a deep breath. She could feel her heartbeat like it was pounding in her brain instead of her chest.
I'm not human.
What is that supposed to mean?
Ellen frowned.
Your real daughter has been gone a long time. Since she was really little. Since we were both really little. They switched us.
What switched you?
There are things, supernatural things out in the world. Some people call them fairies. Some people call them monsters or demons or whatever, but they exist. When the fairies took your real daughter, they left me behind.
Ellen stared at her, the ash on her cigarette growing long enough to rain on the back of her hand.
That is complete bullshit. Look at me, Kay.
I didn't know until October. Maybe I should have guessed. There were clues.
Kay felt as though her eyes were raw, as though her throat were raw as she spoke.
But I didn't know.
Stop. This isn't funny and it isn't nice.
Ellen's voice sounded torn between being annoyed and being truly frightened.
I can prove it.
Kay walked toward the kitchen.
Lutie Lou, come out. Show yourself to her.
The little fairy flew down from the refrigerator to alight on Kay's shoulder, tiny hands catching hold of a steadying lock of hair.
I'm bored and everything stinks, Luti pouted. You should have taken me with you to the party. What if you had gotten drunk and fallen down again?
Kay, Ellen said, her voice shaking. What is that thing?
Luti snarled.
Rude! I will tangle your hair and sour all your milk.
She's my evidence, so that you'll listen to me. Really listen.
Whatever it is, Ellen said, you're nothing like it.
Kay took a deep breath and dropped what glamour was left. She couldn't see her own face, but she knew how she looked to Ellen now. Eyes black and glossy as oil. Skin green as a grass stain. She could see her hands folded in front of her, her long fingers with an extra joint that made them seem curled even when they were at rest. The cigarette dropped from her mother's fingers. It burned the linoleum floor where it fell, the edges of the melting plastic crater glowing, the center black as ash, black as Kay's eyes.
No,
Ellen said, shaking her head and backing away from Kay.
It's me,
Kay said. Her limbs felt cold, as though all the blood in her body rushed to her face.
This is what I really look like.
I don't understand. I don't understand what you are. Where is my daughter?
Kay had read about changelings, about how mothers got their own babies back. They heated up iron pokers, threw the fairy infants on the fire.
She's in Fairyland, Kay said. I've seen her, but you know me. I'm still me. I don't want to scare you. I can explain everything now that you'll listen. We can get her back.
You stole my child, and now you want to help me?
Ellen demanded. In pictures, Kay'd been a skinny, black-eyed little thing. She thought of that now. Of her bony fingers. Eating. Always eating. Had Ellen ever suspected? Known in that kind of gut-motherly way that no one would have believed?
Mom!
Kay walked toward her mother, reaching out her hand, but the look on Ellen's face stopped her. What came out of Kay's mouth was a startled laugh.
Don't you smile!
Her mother shouted.
You think this is funny?
A mother is supposed to know every inch of her baby, her sweet flesh smell, every hangnail on her fingers, the number of cowlicks in her hair. Had Ellen been repulsed and ashamed of her repulsion? Had she stacked up those books as a seat, hoping that Kay would fall? Was that why she'd forgotten to stock the fridge? Why she'd left Kay alone with strangers? Had her mother punished her in little ways for something that was so impossible that it could not be admitted?
What the fuck did you do with my child?
Ellen shouted. The nervous giggling wouldn't stop. It was like the absurdity and the horror needed to escape somehow, and the only way out was through Kay's mouth. Ellen slapped her. For a moment, Kay went completely silent, and then she howled with laughter. It spilled out of her like shrieks, like the last of her human self burning away. In the glass of the window, she could see her wings, slightly bent, glistening along her back. With two beats of them, Kay leaped up onto the countertop. The fluorescent light buzzed above her head. The blackened wings of a dozen moths dusted its yellowed grill. Ellen, startled, stepped back again, flattening herself against the cabinets. Looking down, Kay could feel her mouth grinning wide and terrible.
"I'll bring you back your real daughter," she said, her voice full of bitter elation.
It was a relief to finally know what she had to do, to finally admit she wasn't human. And at the very least, it was a quest she might be able to accomplish. Chapter 6. All was taken away from you. White dresses, wings, even existence. Czesław Miłosz, on Angels. Corny shivered on the steps of the apartment building. The cold of the cement soaked up through the thin fabric of his jeans as flurries of snow froze in his hair. The hot coffee he had bought at the bodega tasted like ashes, but he grimaced through another sip for the warmth. He tried not to notice that thin hairline cracks had already begun to form at the very tips of his rubber gloves. He didn't want to think too carefully about the relief he'd felt when Kay couldn't remove the curse. He'd felt diseased at first, like it was him rotting away and not the things he touched. But it wasn't him withering, only everything else. He imagined all the things he hated, all the things he could destroy, and found his grip on the cup so tight that the cardboard bent and coffee splashed his leg. Kay pushed through the front door with enough force to nearly send it crashing against the side of the building. Luti fluttered alongside her, darting out into the safety of the air. Corny stood up reflexively. Kay paced back and forth on the steps.
She pretty much hates me. I guess I should have pretty much expected that.
Well, then, I'm not bringing her a soda, Corny said, popping the tab and taking a swig. He made a face.
Ugh, diet.
Kay didn't even smile. She wrapped her purple coat around herself.
I'm going to get back the other Kay for her. I'm going to switch us back.
But, Kay? Corny struggled to find the words.
You're her daughter, and that other kid...
She doesn't even know Ellen. Ellen doesn't know her.
Sure, Kay said hollowly. It might be awkward at first, but they'll work it out.
It's not that simple, Corny started. Kay cut him off.
It is that simple. I'm going to call the number on that piece of paper and go see the Queen. If she wants something from me, then I have a chance of getting the other Kay back.
Sure, I bet she'd trade Chibi Kay for your head on a platter, Corny said, frowning.
Chibi Kay?
Kay looked as if she didn't know whether to laugh or hit him. He shrugged.
You know, like in those mangas where they draw the cute, small version of a character. I know what a chibi is.
She dug around in her pocket.
Give me your cell phone for a second.
He looked at her evenly. You know I'm coming with you, right?
I don't...
Kay started. I can handle it, Corny said before she could finish. Just because this is dumb doesn't mean you get to do it alone, and I don't need your protection.
And I don't want to screw up your life more than I already have.
Look, Corny said, before you mentioned that maybe this fixer guy would know something about my curse. We would have called this person, and I would have gone with you anyway.
Fine, okay.
Sell?
Let me call,
Corny said, holding out his hand. Kay sighed, seeming to deflate. She held out the paper.
Fine.
Corny punched in the number, although it took a few tries with the thick gloves. The phone rang once, and a computer voice said, Hit pound and dial your number.
Pager, he said to Kay's questioning look.
Yeah, your guide to the Sealy Court is totally a dealer. Ludi settled on Kay's shoulder and grabbed a clump of green hair, wrapping it around her tiny body like a cloak.
Bitter coldy cold, she said.
Let's head toward your car. Maybe by the time we get there, he'll call back.
Corny jumped off the steps. Otherwise, we can sleep in the back covered in fast food garbage like the brother and sister in Babes in the Wood who got...
Ludi, Kay said, interrupting him. You can't come. You have to watch over my mom. Please. Just to make sure that she's okay.
But it smells, and I'm bored.
Luti, please. Where we're going, it could be dangerous.
The little fairy flew up, wings and clotted cream hair making her seem like a tossed handful of snow.
I'm half sick of iron, but I will stay for you, for you.
She pointed one toothpick tiny finger down at Kay as she rose toward the apartment window.
We'll come for you as soon as we can,
Corny called, but he was relieved. Sometimes it was tiring trying not to stare at her delicate hands or her miniature bird-black eyes. There was nothing human about her. As they crossed the street, Corny's phone rang. He flipped it open.
Hey,
what you want? It was a young man's voice, soft and angry. Who gave you this number?
I'm sorry, maybe I dialed wrong.
He made wide eyes at Kay.
We're looking for the fixer.
The line went quiet, And Corny winced at how lame he sounded.
You still haven't told me what you want, the boy said.
My friend got a note, said you could help her see the queen.
Okay.
So wait, you are the fixer? Corny said, and smiled when Kay looked over impatiently.
Ask him about the curse, Kay said.
Yeah, that's me.
The boy's tone made it hard for Corny to decide if he really meant it.
And yeah, I'm supposed to take a girl upstate. Tell her to come over here in the morning and we can go. You got paper?
Hold on. Corny fumbled for something to write with. Kay reached into her pockets and came up with a pen. When she held it out, he took it and her arm.
Okay, go.
The boy gave them his address, Riverside Drive on the Upper West Side. Corny wrote it on Kay's skin.
I want to leave now, Kay said. Tell him, tonight.
She wants to leave tonight, Corny repeated into the phone.
Is that girl crazy?
The boy asked.
It's 2 a.m.
Kay pulled the phone out of Corny's hands. We just need directions.
Uh-huh, she said.
Okay. She hung up. He wants us to head over to the address he gave you. He forced himself not to roll his eyes. Corny parked in front of a metered spot, figuring he could move the car later. Out beyond the park, the river glistened, reflecting the lights of the city. Kay took a deep breath as she stepped out, and he saw human color cover her green cheeks. They walked back and forth on the street, checking numbers until they came to a short building with a glossy black door.
This isn't really the place, is it?
Corny asked.
It's kind of really nice. Too nice.
The address is right. Kay held up her arm to show him what he'd written. A woman with red-rimmed eyes and frizzy hair stepped out onto the landing, letting the door swing behind her. Corny stepped out of the way and caught it before it slammed closed. As she walked down the steps, he thought he saw a swaddled-up bundle of twigs in her arms. Kay's gaze followed the bundle.
Maybe we should think more about this, Corny said.
Kay pressed the buzzer. After a few moments, a dark-skinned boy with his hair and thick herringbone cornrows opened the door. One of his eyes was cloudy, the lower part of the pupil obscured by a milky haze. Metal studs threaded through his eyebrow, and a stretch of pale scar tissue on his lower lip seemed to indicate that a ring had once been ripped loose from his mouth, although a new one gleamed next to the scar.
"You're in with the Seely Court?" Corny asked, incredulous.
The boy shook his head.
I'm as human as you. Now her, on the other hand.
He looked at Kay.
The queen never said nothing about a pixie. I don't let folk in my house.
Corny looked over at Kay. To him, she seemed glamored, her wings gone, her skin pink, and her eyes a perfectly average brown. He looked back at the boy in the doorway.
So what exactly did she say? Kay asked.
Solarial.
Her messenger told me that you were a little jumpy around fairies, the boy said, looking at Corny. That you might feel more comfortable with me.
Kay poked Corny in the side and he rolled his eyes. Jumpy wasn't exactly how he wanted to be thought of.
I was supposed to tell you that the Lady Solarial invites you to visit her court.
The boy turned his lip ring idly. She wants you to consider your part in the coming war.
Okay, that's enough, Corny said. Let's get out of here.
No, Kay said. Wait.
She anticipated your hesitation.
The boy smiled.
Corny interrupted him. Let me guess. For a limited time only, the Queen offers a free magazine subscription with each forced march to Fairyland. You can choose between Nearly Naked Nixies and Kelpie Quarterly.
The boy let out a surprised laugh.
Sure. But not just the magazine. She's also offering both of you her protection for the duration of the trip. There and back again.
Corny wondered if it were possible that this guy had just made a Tolkien reference. He really didn't look like the type. Kay squinted.
I've seen you before. In the Night Court.
The smile dropped from the boy's face.
I was only there once.
With a girl, Kay said. She dueled one of Reuben's people. You probably don't remember me.
You're from the Night Court? The boy demanded.
His glance went to Corny and his eyes narrowed. Corny reminded himself he didn't care what this guy thought of either one of them. Kay shrugged. More or less. The boy sucked on his teeth.
Not such a nice place.
And the Bright Court is full of sugar and spice and everything nice? Kay asked him.
Point.
The boy slid his hands into the pockets of his oversized coat. Look, the lady wants me to take you to her, and I don't have much choice about being her bitch, but you've still got to come back in the morning. I've got someone coming really early, and I've got to take care of him before I head out.
We can't, Corny said. We don't have anywhere to sleep.
The boy looked at Kay.
I can't let her stay here. I do jobs for people. Human people. They see some fairy and her boy hanging around and think they can't trust me.
So I guess they don't know that you're Solariel's boy, Corny said. Then they'd know not to trust you.
I do what I have to do, he said.
Not like you. A little night court lackey. Does it bother you when they torture humans, or do you like to watch?
Corny shoved him, hard, the force of his rage surprising even him. You don't know anything about me!
The boy laughed, short and sharp, stumbling back. Corny thought of his own hands, deadly inside thin gloves. He wanted to stop the boy's laughing.
Kay pushed between them. So if I were to take off my glamour and sit here on your stoop, that would be a problem?
You wouldn't do that. Your glamour protects you a lot more than it does me.
Does it? Kay asked.
A pixie. The boy had known right away, not just that Kay was a fairy, but the kind of fairy she was.
Corny thought about the little hob and what he'd said.
There is a boy with the true sight, in the great city of exiles and iron to the north. He's been breaking curses on mortals. The boy had true sight. He couldn't tell if she was wearing glamour or not.
He turned to Kay and widened his eyes slightly in what he hoped would seem like surprise. Then he turned back to the boy and smiled.
Looks like she meant it.
Wow. I can never get used to her wings and green skin, so freaky looking. I guess we'll just be hanging out on your steps now. It's not like we have anywhere else to go, but don't worry. If anyone comes by looking for you, we'll tell them you'll be right out, as soon as you're done helping Ifuka find his keys.
The boy frowned. Corny put his gloved hand on Kay's arm, willing her to play along. With a quick glance in his direction, she shrugged her narrow shoulders.
At least he'll know where to find us in the morning, she said.
Fine, said the boy, holding up his hands.
Get in here.
Thanks, Corny said. This is Kay, by the way, not the pixie or my night court mistress or whatever, and I'm...
He paused.
Neil. Cornelius. People call me Neil.
Kay looked over at him, and for a terrible moment he thought she was going to laugh.
He just didn't want this boy calling him Corny.
Corny.
Like he was King of the Dorks, like his very name announced how lame and tired and dull he was.
I'm Luis, the boy said, oblivious, opening the door. And this is my squat.
You squat here? Kay asked. On the Upper West Side?
Inside, the plaster walls were cracked, and chunks of debris covered the scuffed wooden floors. Wet brown stains soaked the ceiling in rings, and a tangle of wires inside the framing were visible in one corner.
Corny's breath clouded the air as though they were still outside.
More majestic than a trailer, he said, but also, oddly, shittier.
How did you find this place? Kay asked.
Luis looked at Kay. Remember that fairy my friend Val dueled with in the Unseelie Court?
Kay nodded.
Mabry. She had goat feet, tried to kill Reuben. Your friend killed her.
This is Mabry's old place.
Luis sighed and turned back to her.
Look, I don't want you talking to my brother. Fairies messed him up pretty bad. You leave him alone.
Sure, Corny said.
Luis led them into a parlor room furnished with overturned milk cartons and ripped-up sofas. A very thin black boy with dreads that stuck up from his head like spikes sat on the floor, eating jelly beans out of a cellophane bag. His features reminded Corny of Luis's, but there was an eerie hollowness around his eyes, and his mouth looked sunken and strange.
Kay plopped herself onto the mustard plaid couch, sprawling against the cushions. The back was ripped,
and stuffing tufted up from the torn cloth beside a stain that looked a lot like blood. Corny sat down next to her.
"Dave," Louise said, "some people I'm helping out. They're going to stay the night. That doesn't mean we all need to get friendly."
A buzzing interrupted him. He stuck his hand into the pocket, pulling out his beeper.
"Shit."
"You can use my cell," Corny volunteered, and immediately felt like a sucker. What was he doing being nice to this guy? Louise paused for a moment, and in the dim light his clouded eye looked blue.
"There's a payphone at the bodega on..." He interrupted himself.
"Yeah, okay, I'd appreciate it." Corny stared a moment too long, then looked away, fumbling through his pockets. Dave narrowed his eyes. Dialing, Luis walked out of the room. Kay leaned over to Corny and whispered,
"What were you doing out there?"
"He sees through glamour," Corny whispered back.
"I heard about him. He's been breaking fairy curses."
She snorted.
"No wonder he doesn't want humans knowing he's in bed with the Seelie Court. He's playing both sides. When he comes back, you should ask him about your hands."
"What do you mean, in bed?"
Dave asked. His voice was dry, like rustling paper.
"What's my brother doing?"
"She doesn't mean anything," Corny said.
"How come we're not supposed to talk to you?"
Kay asked.
"Kay,"
Corny warned.
"What?"
Her voice was low. "Luis isn't here. I want to know." Dave laughed, hollow and bitter.
"Always trying to be the big brother. He's tripping if he thinks he can stop them from killing me."
"Who wants to kill you?" Corny asked.
"Luis and I used to be delivery boys for a troll."
Dave dumped a handful of jelly beans into his mouth and talked around the chewing.
"Potions. Keep the iron sickness from getting to them. But if a person takes it, you know what you can do?"
Corny leaned forward, intrigued despite himself.
"What?"
"Anything," Dave said. "All the shit they can do. All of it."
There was a distant banging, like someone had come to the door. Kay turned toward the doorway, wide-eyed. A half-chewed licorice bean fell from Dave's mouth.
"Sounds like my brother's going to be busy a while. Did you know that drinking urine drives out fairy enchantments?"
"Nasty,"
Kay made a face. Dave wheezed with what might have been laughter.
"Bet he's pissing in some cups right now."
Kay scrunched down in the sofa, kicking off her boots and putting her feet on Corny's lap. They smelled like the crushed stems of dandelions, and he thought of dandelion milk covering his fingers, sticky and white, on a summer lawn years ago, while he pulled off flower heads and tossed them at his dozing sister. He was abruptly choked by grief.
"So, wait," Kay said. "Why do they want to kill you?"
"'Cause I poisoned a bunch of them. So I'm a dead man. But what good does it do to stay shut up in here while Luis tries to bargain for an extra week or two of boredom? At least I can have some fun with the time I got left."
Dave grinned, but it looked more like a grimace, the skin on his cheeks pulled painfully tight.
"Luis can tell me what to do all he wants, but he's going upstate this week. While the cat's away, the mouse'll finally get some play."
Corny blinked hard, like the pressure of his eyelids could push back memories.
"Wait," he said. "You murdered a bunch of fairies?" "You think I didn't?"
Dave asked.
"Hey!"
Luis stood in the doorway. A Latina girl and an older woman stood behind him.
"What are you doing?"
Corny circled one of Kay's ankles with a gloved hand.
"I'll talk to whoever I want," Dave said, standing up. "You think you're better than me, giving orders?" "I think I know better than you," Luis said.
The girl turned toward Corny, and he saw that her arms and face were shadowed by something that looked like vines growing beneath her skin. Tiny smears of dried blood dotted where the points of thorns stuck up through her flesh.
"You don't know anything."
Dave kicked a table, sending it crashing onto its side, and walked out of the room. Luis turned toward Kay.
"If I hear, if he tells me you came anywhere near him," he shouted, "if you spoke to him,
please
said the woman.
My daughter!
I'm sorry, Luis said, shaking his head, glancing at the door.
What's wrong with her? Corny asked.
She sees these boys all the time hanging around the park,
the woman told Corny.
They're pretty, but they're trouble, not human. One day they bother Layla and she insults them, then this. Nothing at the Botanica is helping.
You should both go wait in the other room, Luis said, rolling up the sleeves of his coat. This is about to get messy.
I'm good here, Corny said, trying to seem unimpressed. He had several different fantasies of himself that he liked to trot out when he was feeling miserable. In one, he was the scary lunatic, the guy who was going to snap one day, get a high-powered rifle, and bury the bodies of all the people who'd wronged him in a mass grave in the backyard. Then there was the misunderstood genius, the person whom everyone discounted but who triumphed in the end through his superior competence. And the most pathetic fantasy of all, that he had some secret mutant power he was always on the verge of discovering. I need her to lie down on the floor. Luis walked over to the tiny kitchen and came back with a crude knife. The woman's eyes never left the blade. Cold iron. Luis actually had a secret power and was competent. That pissed Corny off. All he had was cursed hands.
What's that for?
Layla asked. Luis shook his head. I won't cut you. I promise. The woman narrowed her eyes, but the girl seemed reassured and sank down onto the floor. The vines squirmed under her skin, rippling as they shifted. Layla winced and cried out. Kay looked up at Corny and raised her eyebrows. Luis crouched over Layla, straddling her slender body.
He knows what to do, yes?
The woman asked Corny. Corny nodded.
Sure.
Luis reached into his pocket and scattered a white substance, maybe salt, over the girl's body. She bucked, screaming. The vines crawled like snakes.
He's hurting her!
Layla's mother gasped. Luis didn't even glance up. He threw another handful, and Layla shrieked. Her skin stretched and rippled away from the salt, up into her neck, choking her. Her mouth opened, but instead of a sound, thorn-covered branches burst out, winding toward Luis. He slashed at them with his knife. The iron cut through the vines easily, but more came, splitting and curling like tentacles, grabbing for him. Corny yelled, pulling his legs up onto the couch. Kay stared in horror. Layla's mother's cries had become one long tea-kettle scream. One branch wrapped around Luis's wrist, while others crawled toward his waist and writhed along the floor. The long thorns sank into his skin. Layla's eyes rolled back in her head, and her body convulsed. Her lips shone with blood. Luis dropped the knife and wrapped his hands around the stems, ripping the brambles even as they coiled around his hands. Corny lunged forward, grabbing the knife and cutting at the thorns.
No, you idiot! Luis yelled.
A knot of branches suddenly ripped free of Layla's mouth, worm-like white roots sliding out of her throat, glistening with saliva. The great vine blackened and shriveled. Layla started to cough. The woman knelt by her, weeping and smoothing back the girl's hair. Louise's arms were striped with scratches. He stood up and looked away as if dazed. Layla's mother helped the girl to her feet and began to lead her toward the door.
Gracias, gracias,
she muttered.
Wait,
Luis said.
I need to talk to your daughter for a minute. Without you.
I don't want to,
Layla said. The woman nodded.
Just quick. She's very tired now.
She closed the door separating the hall from the room. Luis looked at Layla. The girl swayed a little and caught herself by bracing her hand against the wall.
What you told your mother, he asked. That's not exactly what happened, is it?
She hesitated, then shook her head.
One of those boys gave you something to eat? Maybe you ate just a little bit? Maybe just one seed?
She nodded again, not meeting his eyes.
But now you know better, right?
Luis asked her.
Yes,
she whispered, then fled to join her mother. Luis watched her go. Corny watched him watch her.
Your pixie talked to my brother, didn't she?
He demanded, nodding to Kay.
What do you think?
Corny replied. Luis yawned.
I think we're out of here as soon as possible. I'll show you where to sleep.
Corny arranged himself on the floor of mattresses spread out over what might have once been a dining room. Dave had already rolled himself into a shroud of blankets against the far wall beneath what was left of a chair rail. Kay staggered in from the parlor, curled herself around a throw pillow, and fell immediately into sleep. Luis lay down nearby. Flexing his fingers, Corny watched the rubber tighten over his knuckles. Already the sheen had gone off the gloves. They might be brittle by morning. Carefully, he slid out one hand and touched the edge of Luis's duvet. The thin fabric tore, threads fraying, bleeding feathers. He watched them blow in the slight draft from the window, dusting everything like snow. Luis turned in his sleep and feathers caught in his braids. One settled at the very corner of Luis's mouth, fluttering with each breath. It seemed like it would tickle. Corny wanted to brush it out of the way. His fingers twitched. Luis's eyes slitted.
What are you looking at?
You drooling, Corny lied quickly. It's disgusting. Luis grunted and rolled over. Corny pulled his glove back on, heart beating so hard that he felt lightheaded.
I like him,
he thought in horror, the unfairness of that on top of everything else filling him with unfocused rage.
Shit. I like him.
Kay woke to sunlight streaming through large windows. Corny was sprawled beside her, snoring slightly. Somehow he had stolen all her blankets. Both Dave and Luis were gone. Her mouth tasted stale, and she was so thirsty that she didn't think about where she was or why she was there until she went into the bathroom and gulped down several handfuls of water. It tasted of iron. Iron seemed to be everywhere, bubbling up from the pipes and sifting down from the ceiling. Padding across the cold floors to try to find something to eat, Kay heard a strange noise, like a purse upended. The smells of mildew were more intense now, and she could feel her glamour being worn away. She looked down at her hand, green as a leaf. Heading in the direction of the noise, she came to the scavenged sofa room, where a fire blazed in the grate. A middle-aged man with short curly hair and an overstuffed messenger bag stood near the windows. As Kay walked in, the man started to speak. But instead of sounds, copper coins fell from his lips to clatter and roll on the worn wooden floorboards. Luis put his hand on the man's arm.
Did you do what I told you?
He asked, bending to pick up the pennies.
I know the metal tastes like blood, but you just got to do it.
The man nodded and gestured wildly to his mouth.
I told you the cure was to eat your words. That means every single coin that came out of your mouth. You're telling me you did that?
This time the man hesitated.
You spent some, didn't you? Please, please tell me that you didn't go to Coinstar or some stupid shit like that.
Ugh,
the man said, and pennies scattered.
Go find the rest. It's the only way you're going to be cured.
Luis crossed his arms over his chest, lean muscles showing through the thin fabric of his t-shirt and along his bare arms.
And no more deals with the folk.
There were so many things Kay didn't know about fairies. The man looked like he wanted to say something, probably that he didn't appreciate being ordered around by some gangster, but he merely nodded as he took out his wallet. After counting out a stack of 20s, he gathered the coins on the floor and departed without a sign of thanks. Luis tapped the bills against the palm of one hand as he turned to Kay.
I told you to stay out of sight.
Something's happening to me, Kay said. My glamour's not working so good.
Luis groaned.
You're telling me that he was looking at a green girl with wings?
No, she said. It's just that it seems so much harder to keep up.
The iron in the city sucks up fairy magic quick, he said with a sigh. That's why fairies don't live here if they have a choice. Only the exiled ones. The ones that can't go back to their own courts for whatever reason.
So why don't they join another court? Kay asked.
Some do, I guess.
But that's dangerous business. The other court's as likely to kill them as take them in, so they live here and let the iron eat away at them.
He sighed again.
If you really need it, there's never more. A potion staves off the iron sickness. I can't get you any right now.
Nevermore? Kay asked.
Like, quoth the raven?
That's what my brother calls it.
Luis shifted uncomfortably, smoothing back his braids.
In humans, it bestows glamour. Makes us almost like fairies. Gets us high. You're never supposed to use it more than once a day, or more than 2 days in a row, or more than a single pinch at a time. Never more. Don't let your friend near it.
Oh, okay.
Kay thought of Dave's haunted eyes and blackened mouth.
Good. You ready to go?
Luis asked.
Kay nodded. One more question. Have you ever heard of a curse where whatever someone touches withers?
Luis nodded.
It's a King Midas variation. Whatever you touch turns to fill in the blank. Gold, shit, jelly donuts. It's a pretty powerful curse.
He frowned.
You'd have to be young and rash and really pissed off to toss all that power at a mortal.
So the King Midas, you know how to cure it?
He frowned.
Salt water. King Midas walked out into a brackish river and let it wash away his curse. The ocean would be better, but it's basically the same principle. Anything with salt.
Corny walked into the room, yawning hugely.
What's going on?
So, Neil, Luis said, his eyes going to Corny's gloves. What happened? She curse you by accident?
Corny looked blank for a moment, like the nickname had thrown him completely. Then his eyes narrowed.
Nope, he said. I got cursed on purpose.
Chapter 7. Not the sweet, new grass with flowers is this harvesting of ours. Not the upland clover bloom. But the rowan mixed with weeds, tangled tufts from marsh and meads, where the poppy drops its seeds in the silence and the gloom. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Aftermath. Snow fell lightly around the abandoned Untermeyer estate, dusting the dirt and dead grass with white. The remains of the old fire-blackened mansion showed through the bare branches. A vast fireplace stood like a tower, overgrown with dead vines. Underneath what remained of a slate roof, the gentry of the Unseelie Court had hastily prepared camp. Reuben sat on a low couch and watched as Athene entered his chambers. She moved gracefully, feet seeming to only lightly touch the ground. He had composed himself, and when one of his folk's clawed hands happened to push her, causing her to stumble as she crossed the threshold, he only looked up as though annoyed by her clumsiness. Beside him were bowls of fruit, brought cold from dark caverns, cordials of clover and nettle, and tiny bird hearts still glossy with blood. He bit into a grape, not minding the crack of seeds against his teeth.
Athene, be welcome.
She frowned and opened her mouth, then hesitated. When she spoke, she merely said,
My lady knows she dealt you a terrible blow.
I did not realize your lady liked to brag, even by proxy. Come, have a bite of fruit. Take something to cool your hot tongue.
Athene moved toward him stiffly and perched on the very edge of the lounge. He handed her an agate goblet. She took the shallowest of sips, then set it down.
It chafes you to be polite to me, he said. Perhaps Salariel should have taken your feelings into consideration when she chose her ambassador.
Athene contemplated the earthen ground, and Reuben stood.
You begged her to let someone else go in your place, didn't you?
He laughed with vindictive certainty.
Perhaps even told her how much it hurt you to see what your brother had become?
No,
Athene said softly.
No? Not in those words, but I'll wager you said it all the same. Now you see how she cares for those who serve her,
You are one more thing with which to needle me, and nothing more than that. She sent you despite your pleading.
Athene had closed her eyes tightly. Her hands were clasped in